take flight on a Friday, the extended postgame. Happy Friday, everybody. Four Seasons Football Friday. Luke Mullender joining me in studio. How are you, Lucky?
Great.
Are
I'm up and at him, man. Let's do it. Let's talk some ball with Ryder Nation.
And Scruffy's here, too.
You guys are way too chipper. After
what?
A early, late night for you boys to be doing this.
I'll be chipper tonight when Calgary loses in Ottawa. And our producer on the other side of the glass, our boss, Grant Beebrick, takes off that Stampeder jersey in shame.
I know.
When I'll be chipper.
I saw him in the hallway today, and I purposely tried to ignore. Like, I was hoping he was going to say, oh, you like my jersey? And I was like, oh, I never noticed. But I noticed it.
I thought he lost a bet.
He might have. You might have to switch mics, Luke, or talk a little lower.
Yeah,
the thing's kind of floppy.
It's all good.
It's kind of floppy. So, as always, the best tidbits, the best intros happen before we even go to air. I'm sitting here just listening to these two jabronis chat about their day in the aftermath of the Riders' one-point loss in Montreal last night. I've said it many times on social media. I'll say it again. The Alouettes didn't win that game last night. The Rough Riders lost it. I stick to that.
Did you tweet that before me or after me?
Yeah, probably before. But that's how I feel about it. And obviously, everywhere I went today, the Rider Nation's talking about it. It's what about from my reaction, and you guys could agree or disagree, 70-30 is the split. 70% very upset that it was a game that got away, slipped away. 30% were, hey, we got a great team here. We can play with Montreal. We will have better days ahead. There's a couple of different ways that, in my mind, I've been looking at it. There were a tremendous boatload of positives that we could spend 2.5 hours discussing today on Four Seasons Football Friday. But I guess the nagging feeling in my mind is the mismanagement late in the game, having to call a timeout, losing a play. Some saying it could have gained them an extra 10 yards if they'd had that play. It all came down to the foot of the kicker with no win from 45 yards to win the football game right down the middle, and he missed. And then I'm visiting with people today that say, oh, he missed by a lot. I went back and watched it today. He didn't miss by much. Either way, it doesn't matter. You're not a little bit pregnant. He missed the field goal, and it was returned out for no points. So Tyler Crapina, sad to say because I love him, didn't do his job last night at the end of the game with a game on the line, which is what you want as a football player. He's not the only guy that didn't do his job. And the only other thing that I woke up to today was the Rider Nation raging on social media about Darian Durant's reaction after the game, taunting the Rider bench, using profanities. I had been told that he used an F-bomb. I talked to people close to Darian, said the worst that he said was BS, the full form of that, not the initials. Did he rub it in? Did he display a lack of class? That's not for me to say. Was it over the top? For sure. Especially when Darian's performance didn't win them the football game last night. A missed field goal is what caused him to celebrate like that. Had Crapina made the field goal, Darian slunks into the Alouettes locker room very disappointed. I'm disappointed. 21 penalties, 3 turnovers, losing the turnover battle, a missed field goal. I thought they were going to win.
Game, there were 3 keys to winning that football. We said at the beginning of the game there were 3 keys to winning that football game. One was no dumb penalties, right? 2 was ball security, things like that. You couldn't give that team any more than they were good enough to get themselves. Things like that. For anybody throwing Tyler Crapina under the bus has lost it. It's unfortunate because you automatically say, well, that's the kicker's job. And I agree, that is. But to put the penalties in perspective, they gave them an entire field worth of possession. An entire field. So just even more, actually. An entire field and half an end zone of yardage is what the Saskatchewan Rough Riders gave the Montreal Alouettes through penalties. So it's tough. And I'm going to go on the side of the people that are angry. I'm not angry. But what I am doing, though, is pointing out how much that locker room needs to look at the game film and really dissect all of the things that went wrong. Because the positive aspect of the whole thing is that the positives were exactly what this team, or what you were hoping this team would look like. Good offensive line play, blocking for the quarterback, immense talent at the wide receiver position. You look at Kevin Glenn's distribution of the ball. You have it right in front of you?
Yeah.
Look at the receivers.
I'll dig it up. You got to go through the pile here.
There's not one receiver that stands out in terms of possession. Not one, right? You look at Nick Dembski, 7 catches. Cameron Marshall's down for 4, but he's a running back. Bakari Grant had 6. Naaman Roosevelt had 7. Caleb Holly had 5. Deron Carter, who was being covered by one of the best halfbacks or the best cornerbacks in the Canadian Football League, and Jonathan Mincy, only had 2. They did a good job of limiting Deron Carter and putting Mincy on him. But that's some distribution, right? So moving forward, you love the positives, but that's why as a team, you got to really hone in on the negatives, and you got to be upset about it, because that's what's going to get you to compete in the West Division. Because we know that that Montreal team is good. That is a good Montreal team. And then you have that asterisk that says, but they have to stay healthy because they're an older team. But I'll tell you what, if Montreal stays healthy, that's a team that's going to compete in the East, right? But the West Division is another monster. So you got to get everything right that you need to get right. And that includes communication between the players and the coaches too, right? See, we're up in the booth, and when I'm looking at the game, I'm looking at it from a player's point of view. So if the coach calls something, that's what the coach is calling. That's what we're doing, right? But, and I understand all of a sudden there was this outpouring after the game. Well, why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do this? Oh, it was crazy. We didn't get another timeout. We could have been, could have, should have, would have. It didn't happen, right? At the end of the game, you still had a chance to win the football game. So you have to be so hard on yourself and look at everything that went wrong in that game, because the things that went wrong were things that you could control. Turning the ball over, penalties, and small things that you like that, that lead to losses in bigger pictures.
And that's about the best way to describe it.
My thoughts, guys, if Tyler Caprini makes that field goal, Rider Nation is as happy as can be, because they have started the season at 1-0, they shut up Darian Durant, and they beat the Alouettes.
It's the perfect scenario.
Yes, the clock management in the final minute was not good. There were a lot of positives that unfortunately were ruined by the fact that a kicker who has made game-winning field goals before had a 45-yarder, which was in his range with no wind and in the middle of the field, missed the kick, which unfortunately ruined a tremendous amount of positives for the football team. If Tyler Crepinia makes that kick, we are not talking about the what ifs right now. We are talking about the fact that they are a 1-0 football team going into a very big game against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on Canada Day. Now, is that to say I'm putting the blame on Tyler Crepinia for this one? Not entirely, but you had one job. And on this night, you didn't make it. You have done it before, but on this night, you didn't come through. And I'm sure that Tyler Crepinia feels like a bag of you-know-what. And I know that there are people out there that are wondering if Quinn Van Gilswick will be the kicker for the game against Winnipeg. I didn't think Josh Bartel had a very good night punting the football last night. So you have to wonder if Van Gilswick will come in. The one thing that I really liked about this team last night, Boris Beaty kept hemming the Riders inside their 20 with punts.
I'm getting out.
And we were slowly losing field position as that game continued. And there was at one point I thought the first points of the CFL season were going to be a safety when the punter kneels in the end zone. But Chris Jones had the confidence in his defense to have Bartel kick that ball out of the end zone. And as much as what Beaty continued to hem the Riders in, the Riders were not giving up points. And I liked what they did defensively. I thought Darian was very subpar last night, with the exception of the throw to BJ Cunningham. And you talked about Darian's thing last night. You know what? Yeah. You won the football game, not because of what you did, because of what they did.
Or didn't do.
This wasn't the Grey Cup. You don't celebrate like that on week one. And I understand there was some emotion there.
Yeah.
And as much as I like doubles, and Roddy, you know I'm a big fan of his, I thought that was a little over the top by him last night. But that being said, that emotion that he had felt and kept bottled up all week by not providing any bulletin board comments, that emotion finally came out last night. Should he have done it? Probably not the way the game ended. If he throws a game-winning touchdown pass with 10 seconds left to Cunningham or to Nick Lewis, Darian, you can go nuts. But they didn't win because of what Darian did. They lost because Crapinha missed the kick.
Luke said it before we went to air. He said the Rider Nation just wants to talk about it today. So let's let them do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
936-6262 is the in-town number. Toll free, 1-866-767-0620. Are you singing from our hymn book? Or do you think we're completely out to lunch? Bailey and Finlater writes in on the Prairie Mobile text line. He says, Rod, how can you sit there and say the Owls didn't win it? The Riders shouldn't have been there. The Bakari Grant touchdown was not a touchdown. Well, it was ruled a touchdown upon review. He says, Ballsy and Mike McCullough, Ballsy and McCullough, Dunnigan and Stiegel, and even lots of Rider fans all agreed on that. Replay was as perfect as he could be, so Glenn Johnson has already blown his promise. That from Bailey. He says, enjoy your crow with hot sauce that you told me to enjoy once. And sit, you've had to eat it three times. That's from Bailey. But how can you sit there as an Alouettes fan and point the finger at us? You won the game on a missed field goal. The Riders lost it. Montreal didn't win it. We'll take a timeout. We're just getting rolling. Those are the opening thoughts on a Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. Boston Pizza afternoon rush time. The Chicago Blackhawks have reacquired forward Brandon Saad in a trade with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Saad spent his four seasons, his first four with Chicago, helped the Blackhawks win two Stanley Cups before being traded to the Blue Jackets. To complete the deal, the Blackhawks parted with top young forward Artemi Panarin. He teamed with Patrick Kane and Artem Anisimov to form one of the NHL's most potent lines. The past couple seasons, Chicago hosts the NHL draft tonight. The Calgary Stampeders will have two early chances to avenge their 39-33 overtime loss to Ottawa at last year's Grey Cup. The Red Blacks host the Stamps tonight. And if Ottawa wins, Calgary gets another shot at the defending champs next week at McMahon Stadium. And the Blue Jays open a three-game series against the Royals tonight in Kansas City. Lefty Jay Happ gets the start for Toronto. The Royals counter with Jake Junis. That is the Boston Pizza afternoon rush. Enjoy the delicious brand-new fire-grilled pizzas at your local Boston Pizza today or order online at bostonpizza.com. Just a correction, the penalties officially for the Riders were 12 for 113. I was going off Chris Jones' post-game comment where he mentioned 21. And, Mitch, you have a thought on that?
I believe, Rod, that it was 21 penalties in all called against the Riders. 12 were accepted by the Alouettes.
There you go. On the Prairie Mobile text line from Johnny in Humboldt, he says, I think the over-the-top reaction from the fans is because we are so tired of losing. We just want to win. Pointed out last night by George Nitzos on Twitter that the Riders 10-36 since the 2014 Banjo Bowl. That stat's true. You can't hold this regime accountable for the sins of the 2015 team, but the disheartening thing of the penalties and the turnovers and the this and the that last night was it was very reminiscent of last year. Granted, it was moved up to week one, but it's frustrating because you wonder, are they learning? And Luke, do you say it's an entirely new team? So don't hold this team accountable for last year's sins?
No,
or is it
not
a continuity?
No,
is it a continuation?
There's guys that were here last year that are part of that core that are expected to be part of that leadership.
And I didn't
group.
Say I believe and, it.
Yeah, no.
I'm just putting it up
and
there.
You absolutely have to hold that team accountable. Again, let's do facts if you want to do it. The team's won three games in there in Montreal in the last 11 years, including this year now.
Guys, I don't want to
three games. That is the second hardest building to get into a win in for Saskatchewan other than Edmonton, period.
I don't want to be an apologist for the penalties, but week one of the CFL season, you are not crisp, and I don't care what team you are. And as these, we see the games in the rest of the weekend, I don't know, you know, what the penalty counts will be. But Luke, you've got it there. What were the penalties for Montreal last night?
I'm not sure.
Seven for seven.
And I don't know, like, again, how many that the Riders declined there, but there was, you know, Montreal was in double digits in penalties as well. And it is week one, and I know there's always that thought process that there's not enough preseason games in the CFL to get everybody on the same page. And I know Ballsy talked about last night there should be one game that's rookies only so that you can get an evaluation, because Kevin Glenn really only got a couple of series with his team before it goes out to count.
No, here's
and,
here's...
and I just, I when I looked at that game last night and I went, okay, those penalties are bad and you shouldn't be taking those, but it is week one when you're still trying to get used to everybody. So
I don't, and here's why I'm not going to agree with you at all.
Well, you're
and,
the player, so that's why I'm sort of asking you.
And it's cool because the CFL actually breaks it down. You got 113 yards for Saskatchewan. You got 65 for Montreal. But here's the big one. Preventable penalties. 7 for 52 yards. Preventable means things like things you can control, right? Roughness. 4 penalties for 55 yards.
Well, yeah,
the only technical penalty they got hit with is 1 for 6 yards. You look at Montreal on the other hand, okay? 65 worth of penalties, preventable only 2 for 10 yards. Roughness 1, technical 4. So you're looking at 107 yards of penalties that you should not
be getting.
Is that
new this year?
I think it must be, because I've never seen it.
Do you have a list, and I don't know the answer to this, what is considered a preventable penalty? Like, is no yards considered preventable?
I would say so. Yeah, I would say.
Is lining up offside preventable?
Say so. Of course.
Yeah.
So I'd like to...
Jumping
you know,
offside
and
things like that.
I think this is great that the CFL has done this.
I do too.
And I don't know what the rationale is, but I'd like to get an explanation from the CFL what they consider to be preventable, what isn't. Because I think that would go a long ways into that argument that you just gave. Yeah. Because people can go, okay, yeah, that's a preventable penalty.
Yeah, I feel like technical penalties are now holding penalties, right? Oh, hey, listen, you got your hand entirely too high on the outside of his shoulder pad when you're trying to block him. That is a technical.
But illegal contact and pass interference is something that you would consider to be preventable.
I think so. Yeah, I'd like
or
to
is
get
that technical
I'd like to,
because
I'd like to get that that
yeah
that,
out. That's an interesting
yeah
well for one all pre-snap penalties would be preventable penalties and there were a lot of those and then I guess we should ask Glenn Johnson for the breakdown. And by the way, the only thing I'll say before the break, so the CFL comes out after the game to explain their decision on the replay, the Bakari Grant.
It was done during the game,
whatever.
Maybe
it was,
you guys didn't get it. Yeah,
make your call, move on. I don't understand why they need to muddle things up in the first game with explaining their decisions on these things. That's your job. Do it. Move on. We'll get into more of this when we come back after this news headlines update and more from the Rider Nation. Riders 0-1. That's the part that sucks the most. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. Jumping right back inside at Four Seasons Football Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Coming up on the show today, the Greek Freak will be chiming in his thoughts on the Riders' 17-16 loss in Montreal last night. From the CFL blog, Last Word on Sports, Brendan McGuire will be rolling by in hour three. We got a couple of things to explain first, and then Luke has a point he wants to make with regards to Rider receivers. I've got it written down so we won't forget. First of all, the Owls fans continue to whine and cry about the Bakari Grant touchdown, which was ruled a touchdown upon review. I don't get all the conjecture. The decision was made on the field. The call stood. I thought it was a touchdown. So does Glenn Johnson. So did Jeff Harbin, the replay judge. But Mitch, they did come out and explain why on Twitter after.
Yeah, the ruling on the field of a touchdown was automatically reviewed by the command center. The replay official ruled the ball was moving, but was not clearly out of possession prior to break to... Of course, now my phone goes off. Not prior to breaking the front plane of the goal line. Therefore, the ruling of a touchdown on the field stands.
Ta-da! Exactly what I thought. Why are we talking about
now,
this?
Now, as you brought up, it was shown on TV last night that Montreal's defensive back had recovered the fumble. And there are a lot of people out there, and I, until moments ago, thought that, yes, it would have been Montreal football. But
a rarely
not, and you go back and look at a play that happened to the Riders once.
2008.
Yep.
Weston Dressler is rushing in Hamilton to the Ticat end zone, gets caught from behind at the one. It's punched out of his hands through the back of the end zone. Charlie Taft, the Ticats coach, is thinking he's going to get it via a touchback at his own 20, and the CFL rules dictate no, offense gets the ball at the one.
Yeah.
So even if Bakari Grant had fumbled, it still went into the end zone. It's still Rider ball at the one. They're scoring the touchdown. Again, why are we talking about it? But with regards to the preventable penalties, the Riders, half of them were preventable, Luke?
Yes.
Out of it?
You got it? You want it?
Seven of the...
Well, they've got it listed for the whole game, for both teams.
And this is why Coach Jones would be upset, because he was visibly upset at the end of the game. So you got 19 penalties, right? But they break it down for you here. And we talked about there's seven penalties that are preventable here for Saskatchewan for 52 yards. And here's what they were. They were three defensive offsides, two procedure calls. Three offensive offsides, excuse me. Two procedures, one offside on the defense, an objectionable conduct call general, no yards, 15-yard penalty, and an illegal substitution. For a total of 50, nine. That's why it's so frustrating for Coach Jones, because you've got 52 penalties that shouldn't be. So now you get to the technical ones. Holding, one. Holding on a return, one. Illegal block, one. Illegal contact on the receiver, two. The technical penalties, one would say that, hey, that happens to every team, right? Every team's going to get a few technical penalties here, right? Montreal got them to the tune of 40. Right?
Yeah.
And so to the tune of four. So what I'm listing off is included for both teams, but then they break it down to the number, right?
I don't even like – I would suggest that any penalty is preventable, but pre-snapper
killed the Riders. Right?
Irritating. Can we switch Luke to Mike too? Because it's like his pants are falling down. This mic keeps dropping out of his sight. Yes, Mitch.
There are those who are getting upset with the coaching staff and with Chris Jones because of the amount of penalties. I don't know what Chris Jones is supposed to do to stop that from happening. You know, as a parent, you tell your kids, look both ways before you cross the street every day. You get that through their head. But yet, at some point, there's going to be a screeching of car and brakes because kid didn't look across the street both ways before crossing the street. Like, at some point, when do you hold the players accountable here?
Well, I think that this year, eventually, you can hold the players accountable because there are guys that you can put in. I don't think they had that luxury last year. They didn't have the luxury of saying, okay, you know what? You keep doing that, and you're not playing. You know why? Because there wasn't anybody behind the guy to play. This year, in some of these positions, they have guys to play now.
So,
and I think that comes – and that's the business side of things, right? Then it becomes, hey, listen, you're costing us money, so here's what we're going
to
do.
That there's going to be a lot of changes from week one to two because you need that continuity?
I don't think there's going to be a lot of changes because it's week one. And I think that you say, like, listen, man, here's the facts, guys. We shot ourselves in the face. Not the foot, the face. We're not recognizable at our funeral. We shot ourselves in the face. Don't do it again. This Winnipeg team coming in, you're not beating this Winnipeg team coming in by giving them 113 yards right off the gate. That's basically, for you fans out there, letting Winnipeg line up. Instead of kicking the ball off, just letting Winnipeg line up on the one-yard line going in. So you can't do it, folks. And you can't. So, and that's an honest conversation that you can have with coaches to players and players to players. And that is another thing that changed this year, is now the players can literally have that conversation because there are those core guys that have been there in that locker room and need to get some of these other guys on the same page.
That's why it's incredibly disheartening that they lost. Obviously, Chris Jones visibly upset after the game, standing before you at the penalties. But at the end of the day, And I guess at the end of the season, when you say, Mitch, who's responsible, players or coaches, it all falls on the man in charge. We're only 1 week into this thing, but they blew a game. And as Ken Austin said many times back in 2007, we only get 18 chances. So when you blow a game, I'll say it again, incredibly disheartening. Let's take a call. Shane in Regina, welcome to the Sports Cage.
Hi. How's it going?
Good, Shane.
That's good. I thought there was, I watched the whole game, and I thought there was a couple of horse collar tackles missed by the Owls' defense.
You know what? I thought maybe there was one or two. I tend to agree with you, and you don't want to give the refs a pass on that, but it's also something that you can't turn around as a player and be like, when you have 113 yards and penalties as a team, you can't turn around and say, well, they missed those two calls on them. You know what I mean? So unfortunately, yeah. It's something where you have to say, well, yeah, you know what? They're going to miss both calls on both sides. That's unfortunate, right?
And one other question. I'd like to know whose fault it was that we blew that 20 seconds at the end.
Well, you know what? If you want to hold on, Shane, I'm going to put you on hold. I've got the clip lined up from Chris Jones from our post-game show. He was asked by Luke what happened on that final drive.
Right. Well, we had one more play, and KG had a little bit of trouble with the noise getting the communication to the guy, so I had to take the time out there, and it only left us, 8 seconds. So we set up the got the ball in the middle where our kicker wanted, and unfortunately just pushed it a little right.
There you go, the explanation from the coach. Crowd noise muddled up the play.
Well, not only crowd noise, but you got to remember that these quarterbacks these days all have microphones in their helmets, and if those go wiry, you're going to get a quarterback turning the sideline like, man, what's going on, right? So I think it might have been a little bit of both. I'll tell you what, I mean, up until that point, we've got to remember that that drive started in the Riders' territory with 2:29 left.
Up until then,
it was a good drive. And you know what? Listen, at the end of the day, it's still a 41-yard kick. Tyler Kropinas made bigger kicks.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Did that answer your question from the coach?
Yeah.
All right, appreciate it. Have a good weekend. And that's the thing. Kropinas makes the field goal. We're not even talking about the play not getting in.
Yeah. How loud was it there with just 20,000 people there?
Wasn't crazy.
Montreal.
It was loud enough.
Yeah. Loud enough? All right.
Yeah, it gets loud. It gets louder. Remember, we're up top. Montreal, the noise will be downfield. It's a loud building. But, again, every building's loud in the CFL. At times.
Exactly.
Depending on the situation. And you know what? When's the building going to be the loudest? Probably when your team's getting marched on. Because it was a good – we talked about it on air. Like, listen, that was – it started 2:29, the last 3 minutes of a game or a game in itself. And the Saskatchewan Rough Riders handled that part well. That was a successful drive they had starting in their own end, getting it to that point.
Higgy at Regina Beach writes in. Higgy says – the final drive when Dembski didn't turn upfield on second down and we ended up being 3rd and 4 versus 3rd and 1 or 2 or even would have got the first down was the prime example for me of a team that wins that game versus loses it. Clock management, not the best on the final drive. We're not far off, though. Looking forward to a season of constant improvement resulting in a playoff berth. Hoggies played solid. That's from Higgy at Regina Beach.
I think that's what Scruffy was referring to earlier too.
I really liked the game that Nick Dembski played last night. And I know you guys went with Roosevelt for the player of the game last night, which I didn't have a problem with, but the one play that really bothered me with Nick Dembski last night was that play where all he had to do was turn up field, take the hit, get the first down. And instead Nick tried to turn it outside. Mm. And he got cut down on a nice defensive play. I think it was Mincy, Luke. I could be wrong
on
that.
Mincy
was great.
He was
last
all over
night.
The field.
But that was the play that, and again, if Nick could have turned that upfield and he probably would have gotten hit, I don't think he could have squeezed past it and gotten out of bounds. But you need to realize where those sticks are and not dipsy-doodle your way around trying to be fancy at that time of the game. Mm. You got to put your head down, get your nose dirty, get the first down and move on.
Well, I will say this about Nick. That's Knicks' game, though. Knicks used to beating guys like that. Knicks used to beating guys laterally. And I think you're right. I think that it's something where Nick is going to realize the differences in his game as he watches, because he's getting more receptions now. Like, man, that's the first time we've seen Nick Dembski go in and look like a primary target.
I think that was a career night for him, was it not, Rod?
Yeah. So you
in offense,
you now get a guy with certain skill set who's used to beating guys in certain ways. Now he just realizes, man, listen, I'm up against a guy. That guy, that Mincy kid, that's NFL talent good if he keeps that up. So I'm against pro players. I can't move laterally all the time. This is one of those times where I should have dug my outside foot in the ground and burst forward. You're right, but he needs to identify that on film.
Murray in Regina has a question about why put Brandon Bridge in at that spot in the game in the fourth quarter. Hang on through the break, Murray. We'll be right back. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker. There has been a flurry of trade activity before tonight's NHL draft in Chicago. The host Blackhawks have been in the thick of it, dealing star Artemi Panarin to Columbus in a trade that sends Brandon Saad back to Chicago. They also dealt defenseman Nicholas Jarmolson to Arizona. The Coyotes got center Derek Stepan and goalie Antti Raanta from the Rangers in a separate trade. Toronto's Jay Happ gets the start tonight as the Blue Jays kick off a three-game series at Kansas City. Jays coming off an 11-4 loss to Texas that cost them the chance to reach the 500 mark for the first time since opening day. And the Ottawa Redblacks start defense of their Grey Cup title tonight against the team they beat in last year's championship game. The Red Blacks host the Calgary Stampeders in the first meeting between the teams since last year's CFL championship game. TSN has the game. That is the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker. Regina Motor Products, home of no car crap BS. Four Seasons Football Friday here. Luke and Scruffy with me. Grant flying the ship. And I thank Murray and Regina for hanging on through the break. Still there, Murray?
You bet.
All right, what do you got?
Well, I'm just curious because Glenn was doing so well. I'll be honest with it. I went in with little or no expectations that they were going to win. And when I saw the game, I got excited. And I just began to worry about, say, some of the coaching decisions. And I know that it's easy to second guess. I was surprised, quite honestly, when early in the first quarter, our side of the ball, 3rd and 1, and he gambles then. We were lucky. We got it. Good. Although very by only a few inches. And then again, when, say, Glenn is marching up the field, we got a chance to continue with the momentum, he pulls him.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess how much, and I don't know whether indeed got any type of answer, how much of this loss should be blamed on the coach?
Well, listen, I think that when you have a situation like that, first let me say why I think they have Brandon Bridge in there, especially around the goal line. And Rod actually asked me this while we were doing the game, the play-by-play in color. And what Brandon Bridge does is add another athlete that threatens a team laterally and vertically with his athletic ability and ability to run. And the reason why you can sort of see that thought process behind the coaches is because of the plays they immediately call when Brandon Bridge goes in. They're automatically run pass options plays. That's what everybody, you'll hear the term RPO thrown around all the time. But basically that's what it is. It's a run or pass option where you can give it to the running back. You can pass the ball, or the quarterback keeps it and runs it. And they called those plays when Brandon Bridge was in around the goal line. And what it forces a defense to do, so if I'm out there as a defensive lineman and I see Brandon Bridge come in, I say, okay, well now we can't just worry about the intermediate throws that Kevin Glenn's killing us with. Now we also have to be wary of where this quarterback is in relation to the two defensive ends. Because if this quarterback gets outside those DNs, we're in trouble. We got to sprint. You know what I mean?
So he adds a fair enough point, but my only question is, it wasn't on the 1 or 2 yard line. This was back on the 20 yard line and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Somebody that is, all due respect, and not blaming Bridge, cold. It's no different than, say, in baseball or any other sport. You put in a substitute who's stone cold, chances of him succeeding are very limited.
Murray, I understand what you're saying,
But I'm just going to go back to what I've said at the start of the program. If Kropinia makes the kick, we aren't talking about all the negatives that happened. So let's go on the second down play. If Brandon Bridge succeeds with Daron Carter and gets the touchdown pass, nobody is talking about that decision. It's a chance. Chris Jones is a riverboat gambler type individual. He decided to roll the dice there, and unfortunately for him on that one, it was snake eyes. If he connects with Carter, I'm guessing you're going, you know what, that was a shrewd move.
Hold on. So, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that, the theory of being a cold, coming in cold as an athlete. I've been in those situations, especially when I was in my first year and had my chance to travel. You literally sit on the sideline just frothing at the mouth to get in the game. There's no coming in cold. When you come in, you're jacked up. You know why? Because you've been waiting for that opportunity. That's what keeps you warm. The anticipation of you getting in the game. And you got to remember that it's also something that when you're in practice, you work on. So Brandon Bridge is very wary of the fact that, wait a second, we're in the 30s now. We're in the score zone. This is my package. When we've been out in practice day one and two, this is where I've had my number called. All that being cold is right out the window because you say, I need to be mentally prepared. I need to be, because this is where in practice we've run these plays. So you can't say that, oh, they're coming in cold, right? Because they've done this time and time again in practice in those situations. Remember, practice is all about situational football.
Let's go to New Jersey. Ian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. You know, quite frankly, I guess I'm more of an optimist. I guess I'm a little farther away from the sentiment, but I loved what I saw. I think the Riders have got a great young crew. Like when you look at that Dragon and Williams, that was good sound tackling, and you can tell those two love to hit. Lyles, except for one slight misstep against one of the better receivers in the league, he was close. He had decent coverage. Last year, teams would march up and down the field against that defense.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with some of the younger players. Like, all it would have taken is a sack or two or a little bit of timing. Just if you're not getting it on the back end, if you have a little more pressure on the front, they're close. I think this is close to being a very, very good team. The guy I felt sorry for was Cameron Marshall. Like, I think he ran good, and if I read it correctly, the Riders outrushed Montreal, which is one of the better rushing teams.
Yeah.
So I think there's so much positive that this team is, like, I think it's a fine line from barely losing to barely winning.
Wait, It is. But this is the reminder. I talked to Murph about it on the pregame show last year. Their first game against Montreal here last year in week two, because they had a week one bye, was a razor-thin loss. They go up to Edmonton. They got the lead with a minute to go and lose in overtime. That's what worries me, is the mental fragility of a football team that is 10-36 over the last three seasons. You had a chance to win it in week one, get the upset, and you shot your toes off. So I see all the positives.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
And the unfortunate part is it seemed like the wheels came off on a offside penalty in Winnipeg when Darien injured his elbow.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's
and then that was almost the turning point for the skid, wasn't it?
It was. Trust me, it was. So I'm just I can see all the positives. I just worry that where are they mentally, because they were here last year and they never recovered.
Ian. You don't think about that. You don't say, "Oh my goodness."
No,
this
you
feels
don't.
Like two
Hang
years
on.
Ago.
Can we continue this next hour?
Yeah, for sure.
Hour two coming up. Greek Freak will join us. Brendan McGuire, too. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. It's hour two of a Four Seasons Football Friday. Taking you into the weekend. Luke and Scruffy are with me. We got the pregame show on. It looks like a cloudy night in Ottawa, as it's a Grey Cup rematch. The Red Blacks and the Calgary Stampeders going after it on TSN.
The Wampeders, as we call them.
I got Calgary winning both of those games and handily. You can't lose your best player and your leader in Henry Burris, your best athlete in Chris Williams, your best receiver in Ernest Jackson, your best DB in Abdul Kinne, one of your captains on the defensive line in Moten Hopkins, and expect to come back and beat a team that's brought in a lot of guys back last year.
That are motivated too. Calgary favored by 6, just so you know. That's the official line. Scruffy and I taking Ottawa.
Yep.
You're saying?
I am.
Maybe I'm betting with my heart. I don't know about you guys. Speaking of heart, as we go back to last night's Riders loss, and it was painful. It was a heartbreaker. It was all those things. I'm more, I don't want to say negative, but downtrodden than normal, because I thought the Riders were going to win. I predicted them to win. I'm not as upset as I'm sure they are, but nobody's as excited as Darian Durant, and we want to open up hour two about with that again. We revisited it or visited it a little bit in hour one at the top of the show, but the phone's still blowing up with Darian going off. Some say that he was vindicated, get off his back for taunting the Rider bench at the end of the game, using expletives. That's all true because I've seen the video of it. I don't know. I said it's over the top. Mitch, you said the same term, over the top.
Yeah,
Luke, what was your term? You don't care? You're with Devils on this?
Yeah, it's a competitor. He's man, he's emotion. His emotions are running high. He's a competitor. I think he probably looks at it now and be like, man, I probably shouldn't have said that. But, hey, the camera got stuck in his face at the right time. Oh, well. Man, right now he's concentrating on week two, and so should the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and their fan base.
I wish he hadn't done that. There are those that are concerned about his legacy here in Saskatchewan, that the more that he does those things.
It was a nice little WWE heel turn, though.
It was.
Do you remember when Shawn Michaels,
Marty Jannetty, threw
guy,
him through the window
right
of the barber
the window,
shop?
Yeah, like a super kick right through the window of Brutus the Barber Beefcake's barber shop. That was it.
Actually, the topic that we wanted to get to on the Durant thing, now that I think about it, that we mentioned in the news to ourselves, not on air, was his football gods comment.
Yeah,
that the football gods came through, and
because of what happened.
Yeah,
and they always come through. Well, Darian, if you get, and again, I've got a lot of respect for Devils and everything. I just don't like what he did last night, and I don't like what he said. Because if Darian goes out and gets hurt in week two or three, Darian, is that the football gods telling you something? Was that the football gods that took a Grey Cup away from you in 2009?
But
it was. The football gods that made you not play for this football team for a year and a half? Like, were they right because, like, maybe you didn't deserve to win in 20? Like, I don't understand that comment. And I don't agree with it because I just think he has opened himself up to a lot of criticism if this season starts to go downhill.
Hold on, first of all, he's been open to criticism his whole
yes,
career.
Yes, you're right.
He's used to it.
Yep.
So it's not. I don't think it's anything new for Devils. You know what
but
I mean?
But when he's trying to get a new start, though.
He's getting a new start, and he's 1-0.
He is,
but
now
he's got a new
start.
He's got a good
that,
team in front of him.
I just...
That's the thing, though. Like, we're sitting here in Saskatchewan, and we're getting all riled up. You know what he's doing right now? He's on St. Catharines on a patio with his teammates talking about next week and having a beer and laughing about it. So we need to get over it and move on to the week, too. You feel me? Because, hey, that's when you talk about opening themselves up for criticism, that's what losing does. It is opens yourself up to having anybody say anything they want. Why? Because they just won. Feel me? So I'm not mad at them all. It's just, oh well, it is what it is.
He's
it
was such a player's guy.
I am. I'm always going to be. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is great.
For sure, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, on that topic, because we got cut off for the news, I said I was most disheartened because what beset the Riders last night in Montreal was what beset them time after time after time last year. Lack of discipline. Penalties, turnovers. They lost the turnover battle in the vast majority of their football games. And they had close, narrow losses early in the year last year. And I think it hurt the psyche of the football team. I believe it. Had they won those close games against Toronto here in the home opener or up in Edmonton, which they lost in overtime, who knows how the season would have turned out. And at that time, I had longtime CFL people saying to me, Rod, they weren't ready to win yet. You could use the football god term analogy if you wanted to. They just weren't ready as a team to win those close games. Well, we've all bought into they've upgraded the O-line, they've upgraded the receivers, they've upgraded the pass rush, they've done this, they've done that. It's another year in the system. But it was the same old she. And that's very upsetting to me. Now, Luke says the players don't look at it that
way.
Nobody
does.
Great. I do. I talked to the mental strength coach this morning of the Atlanta Falcons about this a lot. All those things that Chris Jones lamented last night on the postgame show were mental things.
Yeah.
That's it. So maybe they should be talking about it. What are they talking about?
Week two, Winnipeg. That's what you do. You get out, you get over it, move on. Give yourself 24 hours, and you got to start preparing for a team that's going to come in here and physically establish the line of scrimmage, and they're going to try to beat you over the top. They're going to rush the passer, and they're going to try. This is a team that's coming into this building is a team that got 55 turnovers last year.
But as Rod mentions,
you better have your game on.
Takeaways.
As he says, it's going to sit there in the back of your mind.
No.
As you prepare for week two, it's got to sit there in the back of your mind, especially guys that were here last year, were in a close game against Winnipeg. We haven't had that football bounce away. What's going to happen next? And you can't tell me that
guys,
that isn't in the minds
it's
of some guys.
One.
Yes, but when you go back to
last year, this is a marathon.
And all the things that went against that football team.
Okay.
The new guys?
All right, cool.
Yeah, the new guys, they're going, yeah, you know what? It was week one.
Fine.
But there are a lot of guys that are still there that went through this last year. So you can't tell me that they're not going,
Rod,
man, here we go again. A bad break went against us at the end.
I'm glad you said that. And Rod just said he talked to a mental strength coach from the Atlanta Falcons. You tell me what's going to get you the win. Thinking about something that happened in the past, looking in the rearview mirror, or looking in the driver mirror, looking forward and ahead.
And if I understand. You put any of your energy, what you're saying. But what I'm saying, though, is how do you, as a player, not go back to last year and go, oh, God, we had so many of these last year that
Luke's
we could have won.
They do have to forget it.
Yeah,
they have to forget the
but
last
how
play.
Do you do that, though?
Well, you go and you sit beside a guy like Brendan Labatt. You go and you talk with Rob Bagg. You go and you talk about things with your head coach who's got four of those Grey Cup rings. And you rally together and you listen to guys like that. Right? You go into Chad Owens. I don't care if Chad Owens wasn't on the field. Chad, how do you feel about these situations? What? Because you know why? What I'm trying to say to you guys is that those guys are saying right now as well. Right? Because you this isn't a sport. This isn't a business where you get results by keeping something in the back of your mind that happened in the past. You can't do it. You'll bury yourself.
But the point is the same things are happening again. And I'm with you. That's what makes this home opener next Saturday beyond must win, as I said to you, Mitch, yesterday. They have to win.
And I agree with you for the fact that they're not going to compete with BC and Calgary for first or second. These are the games you have to win. You have to get an upper leg up on the Bombers right now. You have to get an upper leg up on the Eskimos right now. And with Winnipeg here in week two, and yes, you could say it's week two, but I'm with you, Rod. It's must win, and I thought it was must win even before last night. And if you win by 35, if you lose by 35 in Montreal, it was still must win time next week.
So here's the other benefit, and I know, Luke, you'll have some thoughts on this. Bombers have a week one bye. So their first game of the year is here in the home opener next Saturday, which is awesome.
Yeah.
The Riders have this opening game to work their kinks out, and it was a missed opportunity that they lost the game. Had they won, I felt it was going to be a bonus. But Luke, the Bombers aren't, I wouldn't think, be coming in here as a finely tuned machine, being it's their opening game of the season.
The Bombers brought their entire roster, or everybody who they had to play, to Edmonton in the second exhibition game, and couldn't piss a drop against Edmonton's like third and fourth stringers. Here's the advantage that the Saskatchewan Roughriders have over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers right now. People are going to say, well, there's no film on Winnipeg. There's no film. And you can say, yeah, you know what? There isn't. But you can look at the Montreal tape and you can figure out some strategic problems that you might have thought were there against Montreal. So I'll give you an example. There was a lot of three-man rushes there against Montreal, a lot of them. And you've heard me talk about how good I think Willie Jefferson's going to be this year and how good these defensive tackles have the potential playing, right? So you say, okay, well, do we rush four all the time? But, oh, wait a second. We've got Eric Dargan, Sam Williams, and we've got Chris Lyles in our second levels and third levels, right? Maybe that's why they chose to rush three, because using another guy in coverage helps out just that little bit more with guys that are in their first year in the CFL. So now you look at how that went against Montreal. Well, save for that one play against Ernest Jackson, Chris Lyles played a good game. Wait a second. Sam Williams didn't have a missed assignment all game. Well, wait a minute. Maybe we can rush four defensive linemen more. Maybe we don't need this guy to drop back into this coverage
all
here.
All things they figured out.
Yeah. Really liked what Sam Williams brought to the
table
last night.
But
really liked him.
But you didn't know what you were going to get. You got a guy like Eric Dargan. Well, you know what? Hey, Eric Dargan did bust it, but we kind of expected that. But here's what he did well. He actually played that hook curl in cut really, really well. Maybe we don't need that defensive tackle to go back there and look for that, right? So now you come into Winnipeg and you say, okay, listen, let's show these guys a little bit more confidence in our second and third levels. Let's rush the pass with four and see if they can hold up like they've shown now that I think they can do.
And you talked about Dargan. I was talking with someone today, and I remember the play, but I don't remember the player, but he said it was Dargan. The play late in the fourth quarter, I think it was the play where Nick Lewis had the unnecessary roughness call tacked onto his play, where Darian rolled out, and it may have been Dargan, came at Darian, he just sort of lobbed it over the top to Nick. It was one of those, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, because if he stays with Nick Lewis, Darian's going to run that ball for probably a first down. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody knows that you're going to get an extra 15 yards tacked onto that play, but he was critical of Dargan on that play, and I'm like, well, what would you have liked him to do? Like, would you have liked him to gone and stayed with Lewis and had Durant run for 10 years?
His friend was critical.
Here's what your friend didn't see. Here's what your friend didn't see on that play. Is the defensive end chose to go inside on his pass rush move. He was there for contain.
Yes.
The defensive end can't do that. You know why? Because you put your guy on an island just like what happened. Because now Darian Durant is outside of the contain. And he's by himself. And that's where
he recognizes that. Yeah. And as I said, you're in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Yeah.
So that's not on Dargan.
No, you can't blame that on the player.
Yeah. You got to say, hey, listen, this is a scheme thing here. One of our defensive ends, right, he's got to know. Okay. And he's got to see this on film too. Like, look what position you put your teammate in here by doing this. So just make sure and keep that in the back of your mind, because the situation is going to come up again, and next time it does, you're going to keep contained, and that situation is not even going to come up, and now Dargan can go about his business and not get caught in no man's land. Because you're right, it does. But you always got to remember that schematically, something probably broke down up front.
When we come back, if Rob Bags healthy next week, does Nick Dembski start again, or does Rob Bag draw the starting assignment? We'll take a timeout. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. Time for the Boston Pizza Afternoon Rush. The New Jersey Devils have selected center Nico Hischier with the number one overall pick in the NHL draft tonight in Chicago. The 18-year-old Hischier is the highest drafted Swiss player in NHL history. He had 86 points in 57 games with the Halifax Mooseheads of the Q. Nolan Patrick of the Brandon Wheat Kings, of course, was atop many of the mock drafts going into tonight's round one at the United Center. But it goes to Nico Hischier, the first pick of the New Jersey Devils. There you go. You called it, Scruffy. Nolan Patrick to the Philadelphia Flyers.
Who did the future Stanley Cup champion Toronto Maple Leafs? Who are we picking, Scruff?
It's a good question.
Did you get hit on the head last night?
Week one of the CFL season continues tonight with a Grey Cup.
Football,
with a Grey Cup. Can I do this?
Sorry.
Here, Mitch, you read it.
Where are we here? Week one of the CFL season continues tonight with a Grey Cup rematch in Ottawa. The defending champion Red Blacks welcome the Calgary Stampeders to TD
Place.
Stop.
Can you read it well?
Ouch. Ottawa defeated the Stamps 39-33 in overtime in last year's championship game, and the Jays are in Kansas City tonight to start a three-game series with the Royals.
Anytime the Stamps play, it's fake news.
They're winning today.
On Durant's deal last night, Adam from Theodore, Saskatchewan, says if Chris Jones and the rest of the Riders are smart, just go about your business getting ready for the Bombers and have the film of Darian celebrating ready for week 19. Okay.
Yeah, I think that you just need to, as Rod and I, just move on to week two.
Adrian in Saskatoon, I have no problem with what Darian did. Football's full of emotion. We always get on guys for not saying what they mean, and then he shows us after the game. Honest, raw emotion, good for him. So the question I posed before the break was, Rob Bagg to the one-game injured list in week one. Nick Dembski takes his starting spot and has a career game. Week two, if Rob Bagg's healthy, and assuming Nick Dembski's still healthy, who you start?
If Rob Bagg's healthy, I'm starting Rob Bagg. And here's why. You need to see the little things out of this group. We've talked about it countless amount of times since training camp's done. And Nick Dembski, he needs to become an efficient blocker in this offense. When you're trying to get to the edge as an offensive coordinator with Steve McAdoo, you're literally one block away a couple of times in that game from having some major yards gained, right? Nick's got to work hard on becoming a blocker that is going to allow his teammates to get the yards that the plays are designed for. And that's every young receiver. It's not easy, especially when you're coming from U Sport, and some of these DBs that you see are used to very aggressive wide receivers in the NCAA and some of them in the NFL, right? So Nick's just got to work on the things that when you don't have the ball in your hand, understanding that the play that you're asked to block on when your teammate has the ball on your side, that's just as big of a situation as you having the ball. It's that important. So I think that if you start Rob Bagg, you continue, because Rob Bagg is probably a guy that can go out and continually throw those blocks. He's used to it. He's been doing that for a while, right? And I'm not saying you take Nick Dembski off the roster. And I'm not saying you don't play Nick Dembski. I'm saying if Rob Bagg's healthy, there is no reason why you don't play Rob Bagg. Nick Dembski's just got to work on becoming a complete player.
Well, because it's, man, his third
it's
year.
It's impressive. When he gets the ball, it is impressive. And this is a guy that you really see a lot of potential in.
Joe Baker writing us on the Prairie Mobile text line. Joe Baker, the touchdown maker. He said, Bagg shouldn't lose his spot to injury. He's a great player. They need to play him. Let's take a call. Leonard in Regina, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. I just want to make one comment about that Darian celebration. Like, I support him, and I wish him the best. But I want to make a same comparison here. When Henry Barris brought the Hamilton Tiger Cats, led them to the Grey Cup here in Saskatchewan, in Regina, and Ken Austin got rid of him, and he went to Ottawa and won the Grey Cup. You remember that speech that he made when he spoke about haters that haven't won a Grey Cup in over a decade? Who do you think he's talking? He's talking to Ken Austin. He was talking to Ken Austin. So it's natural for these players, when they get cut, to be really, really motivated to want to beat the previous coach. I mean, if you listen to that Barrett speech when he won the Grey Cup in Ottawa, and he spoke about his team hasn't won the Grey Cup over a decade, and haters. He was talking to Ken Austin. He was really giving it to Ken Austin. So, I mean, I watched the game here, and I saw the celebration there. You thought that Dern won the Grey Cup, and I know, but I support him, and I wish him the best. Now, what if Montreal Alouettes, what if they make it to the Grey Cup this year and win it? What if they go to the Grey Cup and win it with Darian? What do you think? Yeah, I could see him make some speech like that, just like what Henry Barris did to Ken Austin in Hamilton.
Yeah, I think that one of the reasons, because I'm a Darian supporter, but why I thought it was over the top was, Darian, you didn't win the game for Montreal. You won on a lost field goal, so just go to the locker room. That's my thing.
I agree with you.
Yeah. But if it motivated you for the game, great. If it motivates you to win the Grey Cup, great. Whatever it takes, I don't care.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I just said that, Barris, he did the same thing. He sucked it to Ken Austin when he won that Grey Cup in that speech. He was talking directly to Ken Austin because he led them to the Grey Cup here and Austin got rid of him. And he went out and won a Grey Cup.
I agree. I remember that now that you say it. Yeah. And I knew that he was alluding to Kent. I'd forgotten about it. Oh, but you're right, Leonard. Appreciate it, my man. Have a great weekend.
Right on.
We got to take a timeout. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. Sports Cage continues Four Seasons Football Friday. Hey, we got the Greek Freak loaded up on the chute, but just before we get to Georgia at the Four Seasons, Corey down in Weyburn's been waiting a while. Corey, welcome to the program. Appreciate you holding.
Hey, right on, guys. You know, everybody's criticizing Jones for putting in Brandon Bridge there on that play. Every game, you guys will admit, there's a game plan. Obviously, they planned for that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Don Matthews, and you know another thing I was thinking about today? Maybe that little bit of a wrinkle was a, like, kind of a homage to Don Matthews, because Don Matthews would do that in a heartbeat. All great coaches have ideas like that. Ron Lancaster would do crazy things like be, you know, third and three from the wherever and go for it and get a 40-yard gain.
Well, I would hope Don Matthews were the furthest thing from Chris Jones' mind at that point.
I know that, but, you know, maybe not right at that minute, but maybe putting that play into the game plan somewhere, you know,
yeah.
If we're going to use that play. That's when I'm not at that moment. I'm not talking about that.
Yeah,
you had a
in the design of the whole scheme of the game.
You thought you had some thoughts on Leonard's call just before the break, saying good for Darian.
Absolutely, Darian jumping around. I totally, you know what? Yeah, Darian was a great player for us. He looked like a buffoon jumping around at the end of that game. You know what? And TSN, what an embarrassment they are to say how he shined. He didn't shine.
Yeah, I said I had a problem with that, too.
They said he shined.
Yeah, the story that TSN had last night, Durant shines.
Really?
As Montreal beats Saskatchewan in CFL opener. I thought Kevin Glenn played better than Darian.
Yeah. Regina Morning Live had the same thing. I said, grow up. Did you watch the game?
I talked to Doubles. I don't even think Doubles would say he shined that game.
No. You know what? Kevin Glenn came out pretty strong, I thought.
Shame for him to lose. I went back and rewatched it today.
You know what? Hey, Rod, I'm gonna let other people call. But, you know, back in 03, as sickening as this comparison is, Montreal was in town. Kevin Glenn was our quarterback because Henry got hurt. Kevin Glenn led us down to the 35-yard line. Paul McCallum missed the winning kick.
Yep.
Sickening how we're hit. I feel bad for Kevin. It's like he's bad luck, Schlepp Rock.
Thank you, Corey.
He's going to win it for us.
I agree. I hope it's this year, for sure. Thanks, Corey.
What an O-line, guys. What an O-line we got going now.
I like it.
I like it. One sack against. They had good protection yesterday. Thank you, Corey. We got to move.
Speaking of bad luck, Schlepp Rock.
To good luck, Schlepp Rock, the Greek Freak. How are you, Georgie?
I'm doing great. You know, in the sense of what football means to this province, what the Riders mean, and that's the most important thing, because I got to tell you, when people stop caring, we've got big problems to worry about. So it was an exciting game yesterday. Bitterly disappointed that we lost, devastated. I got to tell you, as a fan that's loved this team from the late 60s, early 70s, this cold streak we're on is tough to take, and I'm hoping and praying that we turn it around soon, and we've got to do that. That's for sure. Starting July 1st. I know you guys don't like using must-win games and everything, but I didn't like the way we finished off last season. Didn't like the loss that we had in week one. And as you said, Roddy, that week two loss in Edmonton last year, when, you know, we thought that the win was there, losing it overtime, letting Edmonton come down and score a field goal. So,
George, there's no possible way in history, in heck, that you can say that the loss to this game is a continuation of anything from last year and the years before.
Okay, Luke, I just want to ask you one question. Coach Miller used to say, and Coach Austin, like, what changed in 2007? That gave us a most incredible run of going to the Grey Cups, culminating from 2007 to 2013, that this franchise hasn't seen it. I'm just wondering, are the guys in that room going to run through the wall for Coach Jones, and do they, I don't want to say do they know how to win, but I'm just wondering, why it is that the Calgary Stampeders are going to suit up tonight and they expect to win, and that Wally Buono has come, fired Tedford, fires his coaches, has a young stud in Jennings, and all of a sudden lots of people are saying BC can knock him off. I just don't know how quickly we fell off from 2013 to where we're starting there now, and lots of, that the wins just aren't there. That's all. I new guys in that locker room, I get it. I just don't know when we're going to get that feeling or when these guys are going to believe that they can beat any team in this league. That's just me.
What else you got, George?
Negative Unisys here. Hey, exciting. Listen, we got the NHL, we got the draft on. Hopefully the Grey Cup rematch is going to be an exciting game like it was last night. We've got Bellator MMA in New York City tomorrow, pay-per-view. And you know what? The weather looks like it's going to be turning around, so hopefully it's going to be nice nice weather. And as we get, you know, an exciting sports weekend, I'm hoping that a few of the Pats are drafted high in the draft. And, yeah, you know what? It's we've got 130 people in for a steak night from the Richardson Community Center. So, you know what? That just makes our day tonight to see such great support for community just outside Regina.
Jorgi, you wanted to point out a correction in your spot?
Yeah, like it's unfortunate. Like I said, we've got some early season jitters. But obviously, on our commercial, it says that the game on July 1st is starting at 7:30. Obviously, it's starting at 7 o'clock. So we always say here at Four Seasons, we want everybody to go down to New Mosaic Stadium, make it a home field advantage. But obviously, tickets are, if they're not sold out, are going to be really close to be sold out. So we think Four Seasons is the second best place to be on Canada Day to cheer on our Riders as we beat the Bombers, open up New Mosaic Stadium the way it should be, and then go see magnificent fireworks in Wascana Park.
It's just going to be fantastic. George, have
thanks,
a great weekend.
All right, guys. Thanks for a great call last night, Roddy. Great call, Luke. Mitch, I just remember, the Leafs are going to be there, buddy.
Yeah.
Good night, George.
Yeah,
see
George.
You, George. Put
call
up another
day.
Cam Marshall tweet about how good he is before he fumbles, okay? Thanks, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, guys.
Oh, he's out. He's
that's
in a bad
it.
Mood.
See ya.
He's gone. Daryl in Yorkton, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just like to comment on this whole thing with Darien taunting our sidelines. I'm just wondering, if Chris Jones or some of the Ryder brass would have walked across the sidelines, if Tyler Kropigna had won that game for us and would have began to taunt Darien Durant in the Montreal sidelines.
Great point.
Well, hang
would
on.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. I would
People are
so
getting punchy.
With Chris Jones. I would be so angry with Chris Jones if he did that.
But he wouldn't. Remember what he told Dave Dickinson? Win with class.
Well,
he would have said
so
that to doubles.
Why do players get away with stuff like that? That is garbage. It's trash, and it does not belong in professional sports. It is a mental midget move. Period. End
can
of story.
Can you imagine if Kropigna makes the field goal and Daryl's scenario, and you see Chris Jones walk out on the field and start trash talking doubles? You wouldn't have heard a word about the fact that the Saskatchewan Roughriders beat the Montreal Alouettes last night. All you would have heard about was Chris Jones trash-talking Darien, and 95% of that talk would have been negative towards Chris
Jones. I'd just like to point out that we as Rider Nation sound absolutely ridiculous continually saying if that field goal would have gone in. We got to stop. Guys, we lost. We can't keep saying, if this would have happened and that, we lost. It's over.
No, but what Daryl's saying is, no matter what the scenario was, had we won, right, Daryl? If
That's
Jones
exactly
was.
Exactly, yes. If this isn't about winning or losing, this is about carrying yourself as a professional. And that is anything but professional. Anytime we've had a player that has had that sort of, you know, bent towards trash talking,
And I've been in the stadium. When my guy starts doing it, I start booing my own player. Period. End of story. I hate that. I think it lacks class. It lacks intelligence. It lacks a whole bunch of stuff that's unprofessional. Period.
Anything else, sir?
That's it.
Okay. Have a good weekend.
This guy's upset.
Everybody's upset.
George is getting upset.
George didn't like that comment, I don't think.
Everybody's getting upset.
George Nietzsche has tweeted something.
Listen, if I tell you what, I'm texting Doubles today when I get home, and I'm gonna be like, man,
you were called a mental midget on the sports cage.
I'm gonna be like, you lit a fire. You lit
and
a
he's
fire.
He's gonna love it. Too.
He's gonna be rolling. Yeah.
But does he destroy or even, in milder terms, chip away at his legacy here by doing these things?
No. Not at with that last night. I didn't like what he did last night, but it doesn't take away what he's done here.
I know that he loses some support with regards to his legacy here when he does these things.
I don't want
to
hear. Well, there are people that didn't like Darian here in the first place.
Yeah, I don't want to
hear.
But
now they just can heap on it.
Guess what? Darian Durant is responsible for 25% of the Grey Cups in this organization, period.
However, I will say this.
25%.
And I said it earlier. Kevin Glenn played better than Darian Durant last night.
Agreed. It was, while we're on the subject, man.
I thought Peter Diakowski
trade looks even better. I'm telling you, it was the trade of the offseason. Man, Diakowski, Pete's never going to have the fastest feet, but that experience, that offensive line looked great. You got to keep that up. I think KG was hit once. And boy, was he ever.
Yeah,
you can't let Kai A. Bear.
It was Diakowski that opened up the big hole for Marshall there in that first play of the third quarter, was it not?
Oh, yeah. They did a good job. Yeah.
We got to take a timeout. It is Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker. Week one in the CFFL continues. Calgary at Ottawa. They are underway midway through the first quarter. Already Stamps and Red Blacks. Well, I should say still scoreless. Stamps about to get the ball back here right now. NHL through six picks of round one of the opening round of the draft tonight. Nico Hischier of the Halifax Mooseheads going number one overall to the New Jersey Devils. Nolan Patrick of the Brandon Wheat Kings going number two to the Philadelphia Flyers. The Dallas Stars with the third pick taking Miro Heiskanen. Thank you, Mitch, for being on top of this, by the way. Fourth, Colorado taking Cale Makar from the Brooks Bandits. At fifth, the Vancouver Canucks taking Elias Pettersson. And sixth, the Golden Knights of Vegas taking the Winterhawks' Cody Glass. Anything new other than that?
No, but Randy Turner of the Winnipeg Free Press has just tweeted out, Cody Glass now the third Winnipeg-born player in the Golden Knights, which means according to NHLPA rules, team must put Slurpee machine in dressing room. Very Winnipegish.
No kidding. Just so Winnipeg.
Very Winnipegish.
They just do it to themselves.
I know. That guy behind the board's actually doing a pretty good job today.
For those that don't get it, Winnipeg is the Slurpee capital of Canada. The Toronto Blue Jays are looking to get back on track as they begin a three-game series with the Royals and KC tonight. Toronto capped a four-game set against Texas with a loss yesterday, again preventing the Blue Jays from getting to 500. That is the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker, Regina Motor Products, home of no car crap BS. Luke, too early to get into the Riders and Bombers in the home opener next Saturday, mm-hmm. but holy smokers. If you really do want to forget your last game, my gosh, I can't even put into words how big this football game is for the Rough Riders.
Well, it's the biggest game of the season because it's the next game. And that's how you have to treat it. With Lapo coming in here as the offensive coordinator, I'm really, really interested to see how Winnipeg manages getting near and around that red zone. Because, again, they used Justin Medlock a ton last year, which is tough because it means you're not converting your opportunities into actual touchdowns. It's going to be interesting to see how Chris Jones graduates his defensive play now that he's seen his younger guys in an entire 60-minute battle with another team's first string. I really think that you can, you may have some confidence in there to rush four D linemen a little bit more, or throw a little more pressure, cover zero type of things like that. Or if he looks at the film, and maybe it just can't happen at all, right? So there's a lot of things to be excited about.
Is there any pluses for Paul LaPolice and Stephen McAdoo because of the fact these teams met in the preseason, even though the number ones didn't really play a lot? Now, I know Winnipeg had Matt Nichols in there, but they didn't have Dressler. They didn't have Harris. Mm-hmm. Is there any advantage there for either or not?
No, because Tigers don't change their stripes, right? And offensive coordinators in this league, they might come out here with a wrinkle or two, but eventually they go back to being themselves. And I think that's the battle, is figuring out, okay, what is he trying to do new, and how fast you can adjust to that, and then proceeding from there to deal with the things that he already does, whether you're talking about Stephen McAdoo or Coach LaPolice. I should say Coach McAdoo and Coach LaPolice.
It is too early to get into that game because people aren't willing to give up the Durant celly last night, as they say in hockey. Ian from Moose Jaw writes, and he says, everyone's getting mad at Darian for jumping around after the game. Why wouldn't he? Remember, it was the Riders that left him. He didn't leave us, and he threw it back in our face. Did it lack a little class? Maybe. But who cares? A little of that stuff is good to add some spice to the league. That's from Ian and Moose Jaw. Rod in Regina says, Darian Durant is responsible for 25% of this franchise's Grey Cups. Says more about the franchise than it does about the player.
No, from it Maurice, that's in the history books.
From Maurice in Regina says, if Chris Jones would have trash-talked the Owls, the Riders would have gotten fined.
$38,000, literally, and lost their charter. I'll tell you what, I get it. I get it with doubles. I'll tell you a little story about myself. When I got traded and it didn't work out in Montreal, we went to Hamilton and played Montreal in the Eastern Conference semifinal in the Big O. This is 2 years of losing two straight Grey Cups to the Montreal Alouettes. I got the start. We sat Stevie Bags. We sat Stevie Bags.
just to and we, reiterate
we
that.
Won the game. I played well. And I cried a little bit when we were in the locker room. And my boy, actually, Eddie Steele, a couple of the guys were like, man, you good? I'm like, man, honestly, you don't understand how bad I've wanted to beat these guys or been a part of a team that that's beaten these guys in the playoffs. And to do it in the Big O, it meant that much more, right? And it was an emotional time. And it was an emotional time. There was a coach on that staff that also was crying. He had never been part of a team either that had beaten Montreal in the playoffs.
But did you go trash them?
No, but what I'm saying is the emotions that you go through as a player when you invest yourself so heavily against or in an organization, sometimes they get overwhelming at points.
Anonymous texter, as we end it, says, I don't know why there is all the concern about Durant last night. I found him only to be moderately excited.
I was waiting for that, somebody to say that, all afternoon.
Moderately excited. You two crazy kids, get out of here. Brendan McGuire, next hour from The Last Word on Sports, CFL blogger. Thanks, Scruffy.
Not a problem, Ronnie.
For hanging around. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to Four Seasons Football Friday. If you're just joining us, where have you been? It's been a fantastic show. Luke and Scruffy were with me for the first 2 hours. Brendan McGuire from Last Word on Sports joins us for hour three. And a regular contributor to this program. It looks like we got another humdinger in week one in the CFL. First quarter in Ottawa. It's the Red Blacks and the Stampeders. Jerome Messam just fumbled in the middle of the Stamps' second series of the game. Ottawa turned it into a field goal. And they're back out on offense with a 3-0 lead over Calgary here, getting late in the opening quarter. It was an exciting game last night in Montreal. But exciting doesn't count for much around here anymore. Riders falling 17-16 to the Alouettes in week one. Tyler Crepina missing a game-winning field goal with no time left from 45 yards out. That's been a hot topic today. Who's to blame? And then Darian Durant's over-the-top celebration after the game. I'll call it over-the-top. You all can call it whatever you want. But he's getting slagged significantly for that from the Rider Nation. Brendan McGuire, enough of my rant and preamble. I know you got a lot of thoughts on what went down last night.
Yeah, you know, I was doing the Red Sox broadcast, and I was PVRing the game, and I said to Tony Plater, I said, when I go on with Rod tomorrow, I should just say, you know what, I missed it. I was at the Red Sox game.
Wow.
But I was trying to not find out what happened, because I actually PVRed it.
Is that possible in today's
world?
Well,
no, it wasn't. It wasn't, because Gary's got the radio on, and everybody's listening, and he's updating everybody when Crepina missed the kick and all that at the end of the game. So
way to go, Gary.
So I did PVR it, and I watched it, and you know, you lose a game like that, you know, on one side of it, and you know, a lot of players will tell you this, that, well, we came close, it's not a big deal, it's just one week. I've seen so many seasons in this league and in the NFL where if you lose, sorry, when your psyche's fragile, right? Like a team that's, what's a good example? A team like the Oakland Raiders or the Buffalo Bills, right? The Buffalo Bills have been awful forever, and they're just not feeling good about themselves. And the Rough Riders aren't quite there, but, you know, the psyche of this team is fragile. You lose a game like that, it can set the tone for the whole season, not in a good way. Good example, Jim Barker, when he used to coach the Calgary Stampeders, 2003. I remember first game of the year, they're playing the Alouettes, and they're in overtime, and they just need a convert to cause another mini game, and instead he rolls the dice, he goes for it, and they hand the ball to Lawrence Phillips, stuffed, they lose the game, and the Stamps go like 4-14 or 5-13, and it's just little things like that, you know, on opening day. So, you know, it might not seem like a big game, but that's the great thing about football, every game's a big game.
Yeah.
And to let that one slip away, that hurts.
They all hurt last night. Luke said after the game that Chris Jones was visibly upset, like physically upset with the amount of penalties taken and the way that game got away from them.
Mm-hmm.
There are two ways to look at it. The positives, of which there are many.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what the coaches have to preach and probably already are, you know, in rundown with the players in this next upcoming game against Winnipeg. But there are plenty of negatives too, which Jones outlined after the game. And that's the thing. See, Luke and I are going to have to agree to disagree. If I don't know if you heard any of the show today.
But bits and pieces.
Yeah, but I said last year, the opening game, razor-thin loss to the Argos at home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Go to Edmonton, you got the lead with 30 seconds to go, and you give up a game-tying field goal, go to overtime and lose. People telling me they just weren't ready to win yet. I'm talking about people across the league that weren't Rider people saying they're just not there yet.
Right, right.
And then we get into this game last night, and I guess they're still not there yet. And
yeah,
that's what I told you before we went to air. Good teams don't blow games. The only good news is that it is early, and they can get that first win against Winnipeg next week. I think they will win, but again, it's disheartening. It's disheartening.
Well, I mean, I guess one positive I would take away from it was it really looked to me, honestly, and I don't mean this to slag either team because that's just how it's set up. It looked kind of like a preseason game to me.
Really?
It really did. Like, not intensity-wise, but, like, even watching, you know, Darian and his receivers from Montreal, like, when he had Tyquan Underwood wide open and he missed him, you know, they just weren't quite there in sync. And I saw a bit of that from the Riders, I thought. That's what you're going to get when you have two preseason games, right? We see it year after year. In the NFL, when they're talking about shortening their preseason games from four, some are open to moving it to three, but they say we can't go any lower than three, right? And because they understand, like, these are football people who know more than you and I, believe it or not. And so I think you're going to run into these kind of issues. So that's, you know, maybe a positive, because they're not where they're going to be. They're not at their best yet, and it's going to be a while before we see them at their best. You talk about teams not quite getting over the hump and learning how to win. I can think of two good examples. The 2000 Rough Riders, when Roy Shivers first came in, you might remember they played really exciting football, but they lost a lot of close games because they just didn't.
And they were losing 55-50.
Right, right. Like, there was a game against Calgary early that season. Calgary was the class of the league, and they tied them, you know, and it was just, they just couldn't slam the door until finally, about week 7 or 8, they went into Edmonton and just kicked the crap out of the Edmonton Eskimos, who were a pretty good team that year. So the question is, at what point does this team get to that where finally they go in, they beat somebody where they're, you know, they're really badly outmatched, a team like Calgary or BC, and they beat them in their own park. And that's when you can say, okay, maybe they've turned that corner now, but we're just not there yet.
Ottawa has just scored a touchdown. They have a 9-0 lead over the Calgary Stampeders, going for a 2-point convert, which Trevor Harris just dropped, picked up, and just threw to Greg Ellingson.
That was awesome.
Converting the 2-pointer, and it's 11-0 Red Blacks over Calgary. Does anybody believe, because I've got Ottawa to win, but do you believe Calgary won't come back?
I still think Calgary. I picked Calgary, and I still have to think that they're going to win.
Right.
I mean, they're just a better team. I mean, the Grey Cup was a great story, and I was cheering for Ottawa. I mean, how could you not, right? I mean, you're from Saskatchewan. You can't cheer for the Stampeders. And
no.
There were a lot of, you know, Ottawa fans around us and, you know, older fans, and you could just see how much it meant to them to do it. But let's be honest, as I wrote in my column on lastwordonsports.com,
it's all good.
Calgary's still the class of the league. They may not have been the better team that day, but they're still a better team than the Ottawa Red Blacks.
On the topic of who outplayed whom at the quarterback position last night, the numbers were actually fairly similar. Kevin Glenn, 31 of 44 for 298 yards, completion percentage of 70.5%, one touchdown, one interception.
Mm-hmm.
Darian Durant, 20 of 31 for 233. He completed 64.5% of his passes. He threw for two touchdowns, no interceptions. That's a very Darian Durant-like night.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you look at the efficiency rating in the game, which many will say tells the tale, Darian 108.7, Kevin Glenn 87.1. That interception just pulls it right down.
Yeah, I've never fully understood those ratings. Like, I try, you know, I don't dismiss those ratings. I've never fully understood them, but it's, you know, that number. But
Google it. It's worthwhile doing.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is for Darian is that he got the win. For those that say Kevin Glenn outplayed Darian, the stats don't indicate that either.
Right.
But with regards to the celebration at the end of the game by Darian Durant, that's where we're going next. Somebody called in last hour and called Darian a mental midget for taunting the Rider bench. He used expletives. I've seen the video of it. He did. And it was over the top. Certainly not necessary. I think it would have been nice for Darian to hold all those emotions in. He had done it all week. But the emotions got the better of him. And as you know, Chris Jones said to Dave Dickinson last year here in August, win with class. Darian didn't win with class.
You know, I'm a huge Darian fan, right?
As am
I. Yeah, and a lot of us are. I don't know, you know, like, I almost feel like we trend too much to be more like the no fun league, right? Like the touchdown celebrations, like when it was slowing down the game, yeah, it was getting a little out of control. But a lot of that stuff, I love that stuff, right? Like even when I was a kid, I knew that Mike Saunders was a better running back than Lucius Floyd, but I wanted Lucius Floyd on the field if they got into short yardage near the end zone because I wanted to see those backflips. You can't even do that stuff anymore. And if a guy, you know, like someone like Darian, it meant so much to him. It's so much more interesting for us to follow when he actually tells us what he thinks and how he's feeling, right? If he says, oh, it's just another game, we know he's BSing. It's kind of like, do you remember when Barry Melrose was hired to coach the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Or that brief period?
Yeah, for that goofball ownership that was running the team. And he was gone after 16 games. And somebody asked him, do you wish the Lightning do well? You know, do you wish them well? And he said, no, I don't. And anybody in my situation who tells you that they do is lying. And I thought that was so refreshing. And Phil Esposito blasted him and whatever. You know, I think this whole, you know, just win with class and act like you've been there before, I think that gets a little bit overdone, to be honest. I'd rather people just tell us what they think and show their real emotion. It's like when players salute the crowd after a win, and Joffrey Lupo made a really good point when every team started doing it. He says, you know, it gets to the point where it's just so fake and it's so scripted, you know? If we want to salute the crowd, we'll do it. Otherwise not. And I think the same goes for, you know, in football. If you score a touchdown, you should celebrate. You beat a team that you're mad at or a coach that you're mad at, in this case, you should celebrate and say what you think.
About the game, or actually, even today, Kevin from Estevan writes in. He says, hey, Rod, just met Ed Gainey and S.A. Mrabure at the Estevan Tim Hortons. Two great guys encouraging Estevan to come on down and say hello. Great show as always. Hey, there are Riders at the Tim Hortons in Estevan tonight. That's pretty cool.
That is cool. guys going out. I mean, I don't know what they're doing in Estevan, but if it's some event or if they're going down there, I mean, it's cool that they're at least going out and checking out the place. Like Baron Simpson, I know, spent some time down there. And even, well, here's a blast from the past. Nealon Green, I think he lived in Saskatoon in the off season. And, you know, I think that's awesome if guys are actually like leaving the city.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they, I would suggest it's probably not the first thing they want to do.
No.
On a day off, but they're doing it.
Yeah.
For the franchise. So good on them. Dom writes in regarding the game. He said, were you surprised that the Riders didn't take the ball on the 35 after Montreal's late field goal, or is that basically another offensive play if you take the kickoff? I forgot to mention, we lost about 8 yards field position on that decision. I was surprised because time is a factor in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think Luke said 2:29 left. I've got it written down. I think it was a little less than that.
Yeah.
So they finished with minus 8 yardage if had they taken it to 35 and lost time too. But this staff and every staff has it all broken down to tendencies, trends, what was happening in the football game. I was surprised that they did it because traditionally you don't,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure they've got their reasons why.
Well, I mean, they just had to determine, like, where does a kickoff usually end up? It usually ends up at around, I think that, yeah, around the 10. So if you think that your kick return guy is going to get you at least 20 yards, then I think it's worth running it back because he might break one. I'm just not so sure that time was really that critical at that point. Like, at what point, you know, like 2.5 minutes, that's, you got time. You know?
Riders started from their 26-yard line with 2:22 to go. That's a lot of time in the CFL.
That is a lot of time. And what they need at that point, a field goal? I mean, that's
they were
an
down
eternity.
17-16. They needed a single point at that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an eternity. So, yeah, I mean, if they've broken it down that usually on kick returns they end up outside the 35, I don't have a problem with it. I think if you're down to like a minute, yeah, I'd probably just take the ball and go. Maybe a minute and a half.
Can you load up that Chris Jones comment, Grant, if you don't mind? We had it way back in the opening segment. I'm going to play it here before the break, and we'll come back on this because everybody's talking about that last drive.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it you guys had to take a timeout? Why is it that you wasted valuable time?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Jones was asked by Luke on the postgame show, what happened on that last drive where Kevin Glenn had to take a timeout because they didn't get the play in on time?
Right. Well, we had one more play, and KG had a little bit of trouble with the noise getting the communication to the guy, so I had to take the time out there, and it only left us, 8 seconds. So we set up the got the ball in the middle where our kicker wanted, and unfortunately just pushed it a little right.
Crowd noise the issue. They had 8 seconds left on the clock there, got down to 4 seconds. He just set it. They pushed it into the middle of the field. No wind, 45 yards, well within range. He just missed the field goal.
Yeah.
And if he makes it, we're not talking about all these little things. We're really not.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that last drive. We'll talk about the one that got away when we come back. It's Four Seasons Football Friday on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app.
That is garbage. It's trash. And it does not belong in professional sports. It is a mental midget move. Period.
Can you teach the regular producer that? That's Busta Riles not here tonight. That was a caller last hour regarding Darian Durant. Wow, mental midget.
I was assuming it was some guy calling in on the round table.
No, it was last hour.
Today.
Daryl from Yorkton. Another Daryl. Daryl in Elida has informed us, and I appreciate this. He says, I thought the new rules were automatic kickoff after the 3-minute warning, and he's right. Riders didn't have an option to take the ball at their 35-yard line. I'm sure if they had the option, they would have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Daryl, correct me if I'm wrong, is there not, like, there's a
something like
on that. If the game's within a certain amount of points,
like
you
four
have
points
to do
or
that.
Something like that, yeah.
I believe that's another stipulation on that rule. So the Riders did not have a choice. They had to receive the kickoff in that situation. Let's go to Saskatoon. Dave, welcome to the show.
Yes, I've been listening to some of this post-game banter or whatever you want to call it. The sky's not falling. They acquitted themselves well. What would the water cooler talk be if Crepinia hits that field goal, which he should have, by the way. It was straight downtown right in the middle. He lined it up for him. So, I mean, that's what a kicker lives for. You ask any kicker, and they'll tell you right off the get-go, hey, I want to be there. I want to be the guy on that last play of the game. That's mine. So, I don't know. I doubt he's going to get demoted right away, but maybe it's time to give Van Gliswick a look-see.
We're trying to point out other issues without pointing the gun right at him. That's what we've been doing for the last 2.5 hours.
No. I get it. He missed it. We should have had it. We should have won. And, there's all kinds of what-ifs in a one-point game that could have happened, could have, should have, would have, but didn't. So, yes, that's true. As far as the Durant thing, I realize he's bitter and that all that pent-up feeling, but I expected more. I expected him to have a little more class. I think, it was a matter of him and Chris Jones last year. I'll give him last year. He's a rookie GM, even though he's a seasoned coach. Here's two men acting badly. They both acted badly. It could have been handled with a lot more class on Chris's part and certainly on Durant's. He's had months to think about this now. And to come off like this, like he just won something. He didn't win it. The writers lost it. So he had no reason to lose it. I'm still a Durant fan, but he had no reason to lose it like that. You've got to have a little bit of class. It happens to everybody. I mean, Ricky Ray, everybody that really made names for themselves in this league, and at the end of the day, they get traded. That's the business. They got to appreciate that. So I don't know about that. By the way, guys, I did phone in about this fumble, non-fumble. When he touches that line, his hands are still on the ball. The same thing as going out of bounds. And that's the way, Glenn, that's the way they... What's his name? Campbell, whatever. It's not Campbell. Johnson.
Glenn Johnson.
That's the way they interpreted that thing. It's still in his hands. The ball is starting to move when it touches the yellow stripe. It's starting to move, but he still got it. So that's a fair call. That's the way they call it, and I think they got the call right.
It's a touchdown. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. We're out of time for the most part. Just a couple minutes to wrap up with you, Brendan. Last word on sports. What do you think? Yeah, this guy's not falling. But they are 1-1. You only get 18 chances at this.
Yeah, so. And, to let it get away from that, it really feels like it was just there for the taking. That's why it really stings. If you start the season 1-0, you feel better about yourself. You feel a little more confident in everybody. Again, Kevin Glenn played well. Nobody should, nobody's holding it against him. But, they didn't finish the win, and that's going to sting, and that's going to stick in their craw for a while. And like the caller mentioned, I mean, sometimes we try to we don't want to point the gun at Paul McCallum for missing the kick in 2004. We don't want to
yet
point
everybody
the gun at Kropina.
Still does.
Sure, but Kropina in this case, yeah, we'll look at this, we'll look at that. There were a lot of reasons. There's always dozens of reasons why you lose a football game, but he makes a good point. At the end of the day, if he makes the kicks, they win the ball game.
You understand they lost. He understands they lost, right?
Right.
So the coaches have to stress the positives, for sure.
Yeah.
But we had texts coming in saying, we're just tired of losing. You get it.
Yeah.
What's your initial thoughts on the home opener against Winnipeg?
Well, I think it's a good matchup. I think it's a winnable game. If it was against BC or Calgary, I don't know if I'd feel that way about it right off the hop like that. It's going to be exciting, I have lots of friends on the CFL pages and people I talk to in Winnipeg who are making the drive into Regina.
Yeah, so, I hear that. Me too.
So outside of Labor Day, this is going to be as close to a Labor Day-like game that you're going to see. And it's going to be huge. It's going to be awesome. And I have to miss this game because I'm going to be in Ottawa for Canada 150. But I'm just so disappointed that they don't have a game in Ottawa to open the season on Canada's 150th birthday. Apparently they tried to do that, so don't blame the league. But it was the city that said no, because the city's just going to be a zoo. So all of Canada will be focused on Regina.
Wow. From a television perspective.
Yes.
Or from a sports perspective.
So from a sports perspective, we get to steal Ottawa's glory a little bit.
Well, if we can get a hold of you to chime in from Ottawa next week, that'd be great.
Will do.
If you're up for it. Brendan, thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Grant. And despite your jersey, great job today. 11-3 Ottawa leads Calgary late in the first half in Ottawa, and we'll be heading home to watch that one. We'll catch you here Monday in the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM and the CKRM app.